A clean sweep of a weekend. The Tigers put up 58, and despite all Tiger Nation's fears of defense and lack thereof, the Tigers are 10-0 and still number one. The Raging Cajuns use special teams to avoid an upset, beating South Alabama by 10. Now at 5-1 in league play at home, it's Blackout Saturday at Cajun Field. And the Saints bounce back from a hard-to-fathom loss to the Dirty Birds by beating another NFC South rival, Tampa Bay. They double them up. Up next, a three-game lead over the Panthers in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. All these stories and much, much more coming your way today, Monday, November the 18th, 2019.
And goal for the Saints from the 7-yard line. Again, they lead it 20-10. 5:42 left to play in the third quarter. Breeze will be in the gun here. Trips to his right in tight. Mike Thomas all alone to the near sideline. Breeze takes the shotgun snap. Four-man rush, goes over the middle. Caught at the goal line. Touchdown, Ted Ginn Jr.
Look, you lose a game, and you know you move forward. We talked about this on Friday. You know, the next game can't come quick enough, but you can just play that one game. So I thought we did a good job on third down. I thought defensively we affected the passer early in that, especially in the first half. The turnovers were significant, and you know, there's some plays we left on the field, though, offensively, that we got to get cleaned up.
I got no comments on officiating. They already wrote up the letter for my fine. You guys saw it. You write what you saw. I'm not saying anything about the officials.
Good afternoon. Sorry, Bruce Arians. That's not going to be the difference in the ballgame. The Saints beat Tampa by the Bay 34-17, and all those saying, oh, my goodness, the Saints are better with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. Come on now. Come on now. Easy. Easy. Good afternoon, and welcome. Monday edition. What a great weekend it was. Tigers, Cajuns, Saints, oh, my, all winners. CD, man in the ship. In the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, which is 103.7 The Game. And we are Acadiana's number one sports station. Great to be with you. Yours truly, Studio 1A, and away we go. A busy, busy Monday. We'll hear about LSU from Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. We'll hear about the Raging Cajuns from Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser. All coming up in this hour. We'll hear from the Saints and Bob Rose from Canal Street Chronicles in hour number two. And Ross Dellinger will join us as he does each and every week, the lead college football writer from Sports Illustrated. Baylor goes down at the hands of Oklahoma with a late, late second half push. And row, row, row the boat, Minnesota. Done. Tua Tagovailoa. Out for the season, had successful hip surgery today in Houston. Not like the Bo Jackson hip injury where he didn't realize he was hurt. He kept going and going and going, and it was just beyond repair. His career was over. The surgeons at Dr. Andrews Clinic in Birmingham expect a full recovery, and Tua can move on to his NFL career. He'll never play again for the Alabama Crimson Tide, and it's a shame. I hate to see anyone get hurt. And you can speculate, you can formulate your own opinion on this, that, and the other. But the doctors cleared him to play. He wanted to play. Nick Saban said, go ahead and play, do what you love to do. And it was a flukish kind of an injury, plain and simple. So college football lost one of their iconic figures. And a guy who kind of changed. Look, if Tua didn't do for what he had done for Alabama, Maybe Ed Orgeron never even thinks about bringing in a Joe Brady and doing the things that he's doing. I'm glad he has, because Joe Burrow, once again, 489 yards passing. My goodness gracious. Five touchdowns. He did have two picks. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 23 carries for a 172. And you know, maybe they'll have a first. Maybe two finalists for the Biletnikoff Award that come from the same school, maybe they'll just split that trophy in half, give half to Justin Jefferson, who had nine catches for 112 yards and two touchdowns against Ole Miss, and Ja'Marr Chase, who had eight catches, 227 yards, and three touchdowns. My goodness gracious. What a performance. LSU wins it 58-37. Vegas said they'd win by 21. They won by 21. Yes, LSU got gashed by Ole Miss running the football. The quarterback, Plumlee, 212 yards. The running back, Ealy, 141 yards. Yeah, that's not exactly what you're used to seeing or what you expect. But all this chatter by whoever, you know, social media gives you the right for people to say whatever they want to say, no matter how factual, unfactual, crazy, speculative, and it just, for those that actually bite into it and believe it, well, shame on you. For those that are saying Dave Aranda should be fired, come on. Look, this team is 10-0. 10-0. They're number one in the country. We'll find out tomorrow whether they're number one in the college football playoff poll. Maybe they aren't. But they're in the top four, and that's all that matters. It's all that matters. So sit back, relax, and enjoy it, and let the man who's making $2.5 million figure it out. I firmly believe this. I believe LSU just went into that locker room. They're up 31-7, and they're like, okay, I'm going to let my foot off the gas. And all of a sudden, Ole Miss came, and they started going and going. And once you take that edge off, it's hard to get it back again. And I think they relied on their offense once again. And LSU put up 27 points in the second half. Ole Miss put up 30. But LSU had a 31-7 lead. That was never in doubt. The game was never, ever, ever in doubt. I feel for Arkansas. I think LSU is going to be in a nasty frame of mind defensively, and I think they're going to try and do something. I think there's enough talent on that side of the field. They'll get it figured out. And I think when push comes to shove and the games, the opponent is more meaningful, I think LSU will be fine. I really do. They'll have to prove it, obviously. And again, I feel sorry for Arkansas, because LSU's going to come in here in a nasty, nasty disposition, and Arkansas is not good. They're just not good. Ed Orgeron, in his post-game comments, and he came out today and said, look, I know that team was upset. I know they didn't play to the LSU standard. I know they felt that way. But he wanted to pick them up a little bit, so he told everyone within earshot, hey, enjoy the win for now.
That's what I have to remind them of. Let's enjoy the win. Let's don't get greedy. You know what I'm saying? Let's keep our feet on the ground. Because to win the game. And we won the game. We won it by 21 points. So, but obviously, when you don't play well on defense at LSU, nobody's feeling good.
That's right. But today is Tell the Truth Monday. It's a great coaching lesson. They will point them out. They will get after them, and I think they'll have their minds set right. When your players come out and admit it, Jacoby Stevens and Jacob Phillips, both adamant about that's not acceptable. We got to fix this. So we'll see. One thing that doesn't need to be fixed, we talked about Ja'Marr Chase, eight receptions, 227 yards, three touchdowns. Coach O, after the game, on his star receiver, number one.
I love him. I love the recruiting battle. He was committed to Florida. I love his parents. He's got a great family. He's right there from Bromo High School. To see him grow, to see he was a phenomenal receiver when he came here. But to see the job that Joe Burley and Mickey Jones has done with him and the connection that him and Joe have. He's a very strong receiver. Yards after the catch. He looks like he catches every ball. I'm proud of him.
As is his quarterback, Joe Burrow. Again, Burrow, 489 yards. Unbelievable. Of which 339 of the yards went to number one and number two, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. Joe talked about the 1-2 punch.
You know, we have great timing. They're special players that are going to play for a long time. I'm lucky to have them on my team. And they're great people and hard workers, too. That means more than anything else on the football field.
Joe's happy. I mean, they're 10-0. What more can you ask for?
We're happy we're 10-0. Can't get any better than 10-0. So we've worked really hard to get to this point. So we're gonna try our best to enjoy it, and then get back in that film room and have some discussions on Monday.
There you go. So LSU overcomes. They're still number one in the writers' poll. Still number one in the coaches' poll. Unscathed. Up next, Arkansas, 6 p.m. in Tiger Stadium. So, with that in mind, we'll take our first timeout of the day. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate will join us. We got you covered. Tigers, Cajuns, Saints, and all of college football here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Relax. Enjoy the moment. Enjoy the moment. Let's see if they fix this defense. Let's see. We'll be right back.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, let's dive into this LSU football team. Fresh off of a 58-37 win over Ole Miss. The 37 points now makes four games out of the 10 in which LSU's defense has allowed 35 or more points. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate was in Oxford. He got to talk to several of the players after the game. Brooks, thanks for the time, as always, my friend. What was that mood like in the locker room after a 21-point win?
I mean, it was brutally honest from Jacoby Stevens talking to him directly after the game. I mean, he said it was an embarrassment. I mean, he took ownership of the game, and so did Ed Orgeron, so did the defenders. Everyone I talked to from, both Stevens and Patrick Queen, they all couldn't hide from it. I mean, nobody could hide from that performance Saturday night, when Ole Miss put up 614 total yards of offense and John Rhys Plumlee was called the true freshman of the week for SEC from the SEC this morning. And the one thing that I noticed there was whenever the Southeastern Conference released that this morning, they said the last time a quarterback ran for 200 yards against the AP's number one overall team, guess when that was? That was Vince Young back in 2006 against USC. I mean, this doesn't happen that often. And when it does, it's something that people respond to. And, they were definitely, not pleased with their performance. And Jacoby Stevens, who's one of those people who comes out of the locker room and speaks with the media, and he's very, very blunt about his feelings and thoughts, and he's been like that throughout the season. So, the response seemed to be like they really understood what the gravity was and what they need to change as they're headed towards an SEC championship game where, they're going to face better players in the playoff run that's going to include a lot of running quarterbacks as well.
I read your article. It says defensive soul searching. At the end, the quote from Stevens was, "It would be different if we were a bunch of scrubs on defense and we didn't have the talent that we do have. My expectation is high, and we weren't even near the expectation that I have for this defense." So as they go to tell the truth Monday, I'm sure their ears will be ringing. But the 31. I've been in this situation as an athlete. You're up big at halftime, and you're kind of like you exhale, you take your edges off. Is there any truth to that possibility?
If there is, no one's really completely said it. Ed Orgeron didn't say it. Joe Burrow didn't say it. You can infer it, and they were up 28-0, mm-hmm. and then this stuff started to happen. So, I mean, I think you would make a good inference saying that maybe there was a little bit of a slip. I mean, you're up 4 touchdowns. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be difficult to kind of keep the rate up through an entire football game at that point. But it's one of those things you wonder if that may have been part of it. But I think what happened as well is, Ed Orgeron said that just a half hour ago, whenever we were talking to him, is that they were Ole Miss. So Ole Miss, their offensive coordinator, we all know Rich Rodriguez has success at the, right. With West Virginia, won 4 Big East conference titles. I mean, this is a guy who built his career on offensive prowess. And, the zone read offense is still a big part of what they do. And, on Saturday, they had a couple of looks that LSU hadn't seen before. And Orgeron mentioned mm-hmm. that we could go into some film study stuff on the radio, which would be, I'm sure, very, very helpful because I can clearly draw it out for y'all. But, the biggest thing, I think everybody might remember that first big run out of the second half. Mm-hmm. Plumlee goes off the right edge, pulls a zone read, and there's just no one there on the right side. Orgeron said that he personally called a stunt on that play. He sent Caleb off the right edge to go for the running back, and you could see that Patrick Queen, the linebacker that was most near the sideline where Plumlee ran in front of where the pulling guards and tackles were going to be. So, there goes 2 people who would have been there gone. And Ed Orgeron said, we were aggressive, and obviously it didn't work. So mm-hmm. there were some of these things that were schematic, and some of these things where there might have been some over pursuits and things like that, but. The other thing is, we've also learned more about Grant Delpit's injury that he's been playing through ever since Auburn. Orgeron said his ankle's still sore, and they're going to try and give him some time off this week, and maybe that even means not playing against Arkansas, who's clearly been struggling. Right. But there are a lot of factors that went into why they gave so much yardage up on Saturday.
Bruce Cabina, The Advocate, if you want to follow it and get all the film study, it's coming, and he'll give the details as to all this kind of stuff. I want to harp on the positive. I defy anyone to find four more explosive players in Joe Burrow, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and the tandem of Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. My goodness gracious, Helaire gets a .172 on the ground, and these two guys, 17 receptions for 339 yards and 5 touchdowns. Man, it's still baffling to me. And here we are, game 10. I'm still going, is this really LSU? Seriously.
You bring up a good point. I mean, 10 games in, have we already taken this offense for granted? Because you see something on Saturday happens. I mean, obviously the defensive issues cannot be ignored. But, 714 yards from LSU is the second most ever in school history. The last time they were more than that was 1977, a game that a lot of people reflect on. 77-0 LSU over Rice, and the quarterback of that game was Steve Ensminger. So, it's impressive. Some of the throws that Joe Burrow made on Saturday, the one on the run where he lobbed it over to Ja'Marr Chase over a couple of defenders, just a vintage Joe Burrow at this point where he seems to be the clear lock for the Heisman. But, Ja'Marr Chase in his own right, the only LSU player in history to have 200-yard receiving games in the regular season. Both him and Justin Jefferson are on the Biletnikoff Award semifinalist for top receiver in the country. Everything they do every week seems to be some highlight reel that's going to be there for the team of the century if you're 80 years later. These guys, this is a heck of an offense. And, how badly some of the defensive issues were on Saturday. I mean, the offense was able to overcome these things. This was still 57-38. I mean, this was still a 20-point game for the most part. And there's all this talk, rightfully so, about the defensive issues, but still can be considered in some terms a blowout. So, that's how good this LSU offense is. The issue is whenever you go up against Ohio State in the national championship, if that is what happens, they're going to be an equally formidable offense, and your defense needs to match that.
Birch Cabine of the Avocadero. Coach O said today that the MVP of the game was Coach Craig. Offensive line was terrific. Badara Traore, Adrian McGee at tackle, played well. Didn't play great, but played well. I mean, despite the injuries, they next man up.
Yeah, and that's they played well. Joe Burrow was sacked three times. This was an Ole Miss team. We talked about it last week. They came into the weekend 22nd in the country in sacks. I mean, that's one of the good things that the defense could do for Ole Miss, as limited as some of those good things are for them. But they did get to Burrow sometimes. And, I mean, the other thing, we talk about the pass game, but sheesh, Clyde Edwards-Helaire went for 176 yards rushing in this game. I mean, it seems like, you know, there's so many things that point out to you, so many things that you lose out on, too. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is having a heck of a year. He's a finalist for the Hornung Award for one of the most versatile offensive players in the country. And, I mean, I think just how they're able to run the ball against Ole Miss was effective. I think that gets lost in all this. But, I mean, it's a completely different conversation about this offensive line than what we were having last year, where it seemed like every week there was a new combination of players, and they were just struggling all the time. So this is, you know, they've switched things up, and they can be effective again. And I think that's both these offensive linemen getting more mature, but also this offense also allows them to do that as well, because you know you're getting the ball off quicker, and you're having linebackers and defensive linemen guessing wrong in run pass option schemes. So I mean, it's all coming together, working pretty well for LSU for sure.
You're a voter for the polls. Who's your top five this week?
My top five. I had LSU 1, and I'm doing this off of memory now. LSU 1, okay. Ohio State 2, and then I had Clemson at 3, and I believe I had Georgia at 4, and then Alabama at 5. I think that's how I rounded it out. I'm sure I'm going to be fact-checked, but I think that's what it was. I'm pretty sure. And, I mean, the reason why I do that, Georgia obviously had a big win Saturday against Auburn.
Yeah.
And Alabama, you know, but they haven't had a win over a top 25 team that still remains in the top 25. Texas A&M Texas A&M came back in. So there you go. But they'll have games against Auburn coming up, and I wonder how that's going to be without Tua Tagovailoa is out for the year with that hip injury. And I mean, Mac Jones looked good against Arkansas, but you know, Arkansas's 2-8. I mean, that'll be interesting. Georgia being 4 right now is going to be good for LSU, because I do imagine that they drop out of the top spot with the College Football Playoff Committee. I mean, Ohio State was dominant again. I held them out from number 1 in my personal rankings, because I still need to see them play against Penn State and Michigan. I still think we need to see that. Yep. No one's come within 21 points of Ohio State, but they played Maryland, who is dreadful. So, I mean, that's just why I've had it out that way, and we'll see what the committee thinks tomorrow.
It will all play out. Brooks Cabina, the Advocate. Always appreciate it, buddy. Have a great rest of your Monday.
All right, you too.
All right, buddy, take care. We'll continue the conversation next. The Raging Cajuns, 10-point winners. We'll recap with Nick Fontenot here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
All right, we welcome you back. We know now LSU won by 21 to improve to 10-0. The Raging Cajuns improved to 8-2 overall, 5-1 in Sun Belt Conference play, with a hard-earned 10-point win over South Alabama in Mobile. Nick Fontenot of the Daily Advertiser, kind enough to join us to recap this thing. This was, Billy Napier, first off, Nick, thank you for the time. Billy Napier wasn't apologizing for just a 10-point win. He said, man, we had to fight for everything we could get on that one.
Yeah, he was expecting South Alabama to be a lot better than everybody was expecting, and they were. They came out and played tough. They were a lot bigger. Their running backs were a lot better than people were anticipating, and I think it says a lot about the team to be able to not play their best game, because they didn't. They struggled on a lot of things, but they didn't play their best game, and they still were able to come out with a win. I don't know if that says more about them than it does about how, you know, just how bad South Alabama really is, but South Alabama played a lot better than what everybody was anticipating, and the Cajuns still come out with a win.
Somehow, some way, come up with a good one every now and then. And look, it was Billy Napier's kind of a riverboat gambler. It was late. You know, they were 4-touchdown favorite. They're leading 23-21, fourth and less than a yard from their own 39-yard line. Not many coaches go for it there at their own 39-yard line. Billy Napier decided it was a no-brainer. He called a timeout. Discussed the scenario and came out and went for it and was very successful with it. I like playing for a coach that does those kind of things.
Absolutely, Jordy, and I think the players on the Cajuns team also do as well. You know, it just shows how much confidence he has in his guys. You know, some coaches would definitely not have done that. You know, punt the ball and just play for the next down and trust your defense. But you know, he told his guys, "Hey, we're gonna go out there and get it." And that's what they did. Exactly what you said. I want to play for a guy like that, and these guys do too. And he's just leading the program to places that it's never been, and doing things that we've never seen here. I mean, that's not something that most coaches that have coached at UL would ever do. And that's just showing how improved the program is and where the program is going. And it all goes up with Napier and his philosophies. And that's a perfect example of one of the things that he's doing for the team and the confidence that he's building. Just by going for that fourth down, it builds the confidence that the team has in him and the program has in him as well.
Elijah Mitchell broke it for a 13-yard gain to keep the drive alive. It ended up being a 17-play, 85-yard scoring drive that earned the Cajuns a 2-score lead. They would never, ever relinquish it. So that was one aspect of the game. The other, we've seen the offense at times shine the brightest and the clearest. Sometimes it's the defense that has stood out. But Saturday's win, the special teams took their turn. They got some field goals from Stevie Artigue, and they've got some a kickoff return, a punt return. They had a punt late that pinned South Alabama deep in their own territory. So overall, a great job by the special teams.
You're absolutely right. This was a special teams game. And like you said, you know, there were some games where you were like, all right, the offense won this one, and the defense, you know, maybe played poorly. And there were some games where, you know, the offense, you know, was not the winner, and the defense took over. And this one is a special team. It just shows how complete this team is. I mean, this was probably, in my opinion, the poorest defensive showing that the Cajuns have had all year. I mean, they were just struggling. Uh-huh. Couldn't really stop what South Alabama was throwing at them. And the offense did its thing, you know, scored a lot of points. But without the special teams coming up big, and Stevie Artigue now with his refound confidence after nailing that 46-yarder a week ago, it just seems like he's more confident, and he's nailing his kicks and getting them right. Without the special teams performing like they did, I don't know if they win this game on Saturday. So, you know, it just shows how every unit is picking up the other unit. When one is down, the other one can come up. That goes the same as special teams. Not a lot of programs put emphasis on special teams, and I think the Cajuns are doing that this year, and the special teams came up big Saturday, a bigger reason why they came out on top.
We're talking with Nick Fontenot of the Advertiser. Yeah, Artigue would end up kicking 3 field goals. The former Lafayette High standout now has 46 field goals in his career, which broke the school's all-time record. He's got to be the most quiet all-time leader ever. I mean, gee, I can remember Brett Baier and John Rovetto with 45 apiece, but for a guy that maybe struggled a little bit, he sure has stepped up when it counts.
Yeah, he's played at a time where they were transitioning from coaches, so you're not really paying attention to what's going on with players, especially, like, you know, he's at the end of the day, he's the kicker, and not a lot of people are really paying close attention to the kicker on a football team, especially when you're changing coaches and changing coaching staff, and players are coming and going, and silently but surely, Stevie Artigue's been pretty consistent. Some early struggles this year and wasn't really able to kick field goals, and it looked like it was going to be a bigger problem than it ended up being. But Napier showed faith in him, and Napier had his back the entire time, and that's one thing that I can say about Napier is that, you know, a lot of coaches, maybe more so on the NFL level, but a lot of coaches would would definitely throw their kicker under the bus and really, really bash the kicker, because at the end of the day, like, who cares about the kicker? That's not the kind of coach Napier is. He cared about the kicker, and he cared about Stevie Ortiz, had his back the whole time, never wavered in having faith in him, yeah. And Stevie came through, and that says a lot about Napier. You know, he believes in every single one of his players, from the starting quarterback to the kicker, and they all want to play for him. Stevie kept working and working, nailing all his kicks in practice, and now he's back to the form that we were used to a couple of years ago, where he's almost automatic. So hopefully that can pay off later, because they're going to need him in these close games, potentially another game with Appalachian State and Boone. They're going to need Stevie to come through, and right now I think his confidence is at an all-time high.
That's awesome. Nick Fontenot, the advertiser. Raymond Calais had a 60-yard kickoff return, and it's always ironic. The game's in Mobile, and Mobile native Eric Garrar picked up a punt, rambled 72 yards to the Jaguars' four-yard line to set up Arteague's third field goal. There is some justice in the world, right?
Absolutely. We've seen that with the Cajuns, too, where they'll have a kid from Oxford, Mississippi, and they go in to play Ole Miss, and he ends up having a big game. Or, you know, kids out of Texas and Florida, they'll go and play at their hometown. It's just like they feel like they got slighted for whatever reason. They feel like, you know, schools in Alabama should have been looking at him. Maybe not Alabama or Auburn, but at least South Alabama, maybe give him a chance, and maybe he didn't get that chance. So he goes back home, and he wants to do something big, and he did it in a big way. I mean, Eric Garrar, he's had some ups and downs this year, but he's been pretty solid back there in the return game, and he came up big Saturday in Mobile.
I mean, 8-2, 5-1. You talked about it. I mean, it's just his second season. What is it about Billy Napier? I mean, got to be a heck of a coach. Got to be.
And his pedigree is top-notch. I mean, when you talk about Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney, I mean, who are the top two coaches in college football in the last, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years? It's those two guys. And he was able to learn under those guys. And, man, you can tell when you go to press conferences or – you're just around Billy Napier. You know, he just has that aura about him that he's likable and he's all business. And I got a feeling that those two big names in college football rubbed off on him. And he was picking their brains and learning a lot from him. And you know, he's at UL, so he's not getting the big attention that he will one day get. Because look, the rumors are already flying around about, you know, other programs wanting to look at him. And why not? You know, he's picking UL to places, yeah, that they didn't think they'd be able to go. A realistic chance for a 10-win season this year. I mean, they're doing really great things, and I think a lot of it is because of him and the type of coach that he is. And when you're at UL, you know, you're hoping that other programs are looking at your coach, because that means you did a really good hire. You had a really good hire, and I think Napier was a slam dunk hire.
No question. Nick Fontenot, the advertiser, kind enough to join us. Up next for the Raging Cajuns, a home game this coming Saturday, 4 p.m. It's the blackout game at Cajun Field as Troy comes to town. Refresh me a little bit. What kind of season is Troy having?
Not the typical Troy season. Troy's usually a powerhouse in this conference, and historically they played the Cajuns really tough and given the Cajuns fits, but right now I think the Cajuns are really firing on all cylinders, and they're gonna give Troy everything they want. You know, in years past, this may be a game where you could be like, you know, yeah, UL's having a really good year, but Troy's gonna come in and beat them. I just don't think that Billy Napier is gonna let that happen. He's gonna have the team focused, and I think they're gonna handle Troy pretty easily. I mean, it wouldn't shock the world if Troy came in and upset the Cajuns, but with the way they're playing and the way Napier has them focused and the way he's coaching right now, I just think there's no chance Troy wins this game.
It's kind of like LSU. There's just too much at stake, too many opportunities. You want to stay with only one loss within your conference in your division so that you can get to that championship game again. And, App State's still kind of rolling after only one loss on their schedule. But, man, I would say, how much improved would you say the Cajuns are now from where they were when they first played App State?
I think the App State loss was a wake-up call, because I really think that they wanted to win that game more than they had wanted to win any other. And, you know, it's a team that they haven't beaten. It's kind of similar to, on a lesser degree, of the LSU-Alabama thing. But, you know, when a team beats you for so many years in a row, you really want to put everything on the field and get that monkey off your back. I think that's where they were with Appalachian State, and they didn't get it done. And so they really kind of recharged their batteries and kind of woke them up. And since then, they've really played lights out. Like I said, not the best game Saturday, but they were still good enough to win. And right now, that's all you want to do, just win these games. I think they're much improved. They're playing at about the highest level they've played all year, and I think they're going to be ready if they are fortunate enough to get another shot at Appalachian State. They'll be ready. They'll play a much better game than they did last time.
And they took the trip without a starting offensive lineman, without a starting defensive back, and next man up, they stepped up and played well. Maybe not their greatest performance, but you take the win, you run with it, you come back home. Two games left on the schedule. My goodness, a 10-win season before you go to a bowl game. I mean, when's the last time that happened?
I don't think it's ever happened, Jordy, and I think that's a motivator in itself. I mean, 10 wins, you don't get that every year. I mean, you see it everywhere. 10 wins is a big deal no matter where you're coaching, especially at a program like UL. You know, when you're playing these games where you have to go on the road and you're getting paid to essentially get beat, and you go and you win the game at Ohio. And I think that win, when they went to Ohio, was the key game that really gave them a realistic chance for a 10-win season. You know, I think 8 or 9 wins was the target, and when they won that Ohio game, that was like, all right, we have a chance for a 10-win season. And now you're looking at two opponents that are extremely beatable, and you should be able to go in and play a good game and win these games. And now you have a 10-win season before you even get to the championship game. Wow. I think that's all anyone could have asked for at the beginning of this year.
Got to be the coach of the year in the Sun Belt. Got to be. Nick Fondo, the advertiser.
Doubt.
Thank you so much, my friend. I greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Jordy. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, you're the best. All right, with the holiday season right around the corner, it's time to get in the spirit of things. And, of course, Delta Media has you covered with Louisiana's Christmas Channel, flavored by Tabasco. You can listen live at LouisianaChristmasChannel.com. Download the free mobile app on your iPhone or your Android now so you can have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, commercial-free Christmas music right at your fingertips. The Louisiana Christmas Channel, flavored by Tabasco. LSU just got a commitment on the basketball court, a 5-star. Billy Embody will join us next from Go247 Sports to tell us all about this guard that has lifted LSU's recruiting class upward and onward. That story next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, we're back. LSU basketball, 2-1 on the season, fresh off a win Saturday over Nicholls State. Up next tomorrow night, Maryland, Baltimore County, 6 p.m. tip in Peach Palace. We'll have the game for you here on 103.7 The Game. Meanwhile, Will Wade added a new addition to his 2020 recruiting class. He's got a point guard already signed up from earlier, signed, sealed, and delivered in Walker, Louisiana point guard Jalen Cook. It sounds like now he's got his sidekick at the shooting guard position. Billy Embody is the basketball recruiting analyst, amongst many other things, for Go247 Sports. And Billy, very kind to jump on board quickly here to talk about the latest commitment, Cam Thomas. Billy, thanks to you for the time. Tell me what you know about Cam.
Cam, Will Wade said it best when he opened his press conference today and talked about Cam, calling him the best scorer he's ever seen at the high school and AAU level since he's been coaching. I agree with him. For me, it goes back. I mean, I've been watching EYBL for about a decade now, and going back in terms of who you watch as far as most impactful players. And I know he was a point guard, but Trey Young was the one that kind of came to mind when you go and you watch somebody and you just know that a show is going to go on just in every single game. Mm-hmm. When you talk about the Nike EYBL, it's the best basketball circuit in America, and they have all sorts of 5-star prospects come in and out of it every year. And Cam Thomas was about as dominant as anyone I've seen, especially in scoring the basketball, 28 points per game on the EYBL circuit. Just incredible. He really is. And so LSU's getting somebody that can step right in for Skylar Mays, who's going to graduate after this year, and they really won't miss a beat in terms of points production. He's averaging over 30 points a game this year so far for Oak Hill Academy in Virginia, which is a basketball factory, puts out top prospects year after year. Cole Anthony, who's starring for North Carolina, played with Cam last year, and they were teammates. So, look, Cam is a big land for LSU. He's ready now. If they could get him on campus right now, he'd be playing major minutes for him.
How big is he? And tell me, I mean, is he just a catch and shoot guy, or has he got a full game where he can put it on the deck, get to the rim? Does he have an assortment in his offensive repertoire?
Yeah, he's 6'5", 180. He's going to have to get a little bit stronger, but for somebody who maybe needs to get into the weight room just a little bit more, he's really got a toughness about him. He finishes really well at the rim. He gets to the rim. That's kind of his game. His mid-range and three-point shooting just needs to get a little bit more consistent, I think. But you know what? When you're coming to LSU and you're going to play for Will Wade, he's going to get you some better looks. That was something that Evan Daniels, our director of basketball recruiting, and I were talking about earlier on Go 24/7 about, was just, look, when he gets into an offense that gets him better looks from beyond the arc, his shooting percentage is going to go up. But he's shooting 53% from the field this year, and he's shooting 42% from three in the high school ranks. So he's pretty impressive at it already. I mean, just offensively, LSU's getting somebody who's pretty special.
We've seen it before. Is this the potential for a one and done kid?
I think maybe. I think so. I think when I've watched some of the five stars that have come through LSU, and certainly a lot of the national ones that I got to watch this summer, I think he's somebody who could very well be one and done. He's that talented. He's that gifted as a scorer. On the other side of things, his mom is huge in his life. She was a big part of his decision. And I could see him staying for 2 years and developing that second year. But the difference is, I think, with Cam compared to maybe like Javonte Smart or just some of these other guys that LSU's brought in, he's going to start right away. I mean, there's very little doubt in my mind that Cam Thomas is going to start game one for LSU, and he's going to play major minutes right off the bat. And I don't think there's going to be an adjustment period, but I don't think it'll be much. So I could certainly see him being one and done.
Quite the coup. Billy Embody, Go 24/7 Sports. So you've got Jalen Cook, the point guard from Walker. You've got the Oak Hill Academy forward, Bradley Ezewiro, his teammate of Thomas. They've already signed, sealed, and delivered. Can this kid sign now? What's the process here?
Yeah, Cam is signed. He's signed, sealed, delivered. As well. We'll announce it at the press conference. Cam committed. I've heard that Cam has been a very, very heavy LSU lean for quite some time. I've had my crystal ball pick in on him in I think late September, and so it was just kind of a wait and see deal if he was going to shut it down before the early signing period ended or take it to the spring. But yeah, this is somebody that LSU's had I think pretty well locked up here for the better part of the last month.
Great news for LSU basketball. Just an opinion in general. Basketball signees seem to be a lot different than football signees. There are no borders. It's like there are no states. It's like it's one big country, and you go where you feel like you're going to get to play right away. Does that make sense? I mean, how do you get this kid from Virginia all the way down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana? I know there's circumstances and all that, but it just does it seem to you that basketball recruiting is a lot different than football?
Oh my gosh, it couldn't be more different. I mean, to be honest with you, and a lot of people ask me when we're talking about getting ready for an early signing period, well, what's going to happen? Who's going to sign? Is this going to happen? And really, I mean, a lot of the times, people just, these players, they just aren't sure. They'll kind of mull it over and make a decision. But, and the thing about basketball recruiting is there's no poaching of recruits. Well, like once you commit, so let's say Cam wanted to commit and wanted to wait to sign. because, you know, maybe he wanted to make sure that, you know, there wasn't any more fires with Will Wade, which I don't think there are. But let's say that was his reason. Another coach isn't going to come and try and take him. And you know, it's just not how it works in college basketball. It really doesn't. And it's even to the point where sometimes if you talk to a young prospect that says, oh, I'm still hearing from this school or whatever, when they're committed elsewhere, you'll get feedback from other college coaches across the country that say, whoa, 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 don't, like, that's not true. That's not true at all. Like, nobody is trying to poach recruits. It's kind of a gentleman's agreement that once somebody commits, they've made that decision. So it's very different than football, but it's certainly national. Cam committed to LSU, signed with LSU over Auburn, UCLA, NC State, and NC State really had kind of faded late. So it was definitely a national recruitment for him.
Billy, thank you so much for hopping on board, man. I greatly appreciate it. Have a great afternoon.
Will do. Thanks for having me.
All right, Cam, the fourth five-star that Will Wade has signed since he's been at LSU. What a day. 1 hour down, one to go. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Back for hour number two next.
Decidedly better.
Clint, thank goodness that that Georgia photographer, that young lady, is okay after getting knocked down by knocked out of bounds in Auburn by a Georgia football player. But apparently, she is okay. Suffered a concussion, but she is good to go. Man, you got to have your head on a swivel. Trust me, when you're on those sidelines. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Jordy. I'm doing good, and I can agree with you. You got to be head on a swivel on the sidelines. But man, that was just an unreal situation, everything that happened over there. But I think we also got to, you brought it up perfectly, and I want to kind of throw it to you as well, just to think about it. Why didn't Gary Danielson just shut up and let things kind of play out? Because honestly, it was very awkward watching him on CBS talking about it. I was like, dude, just shut up and let it play out.
I don't think he realized what was going on. I don't know. You just got to. Yeah, no humor involved in that thing in any way, shape, or form. But to Auburn's fans' credit, boy, they certainly paid their respects, and they understood what was going on. Just thank goodness that young lady is okay. That's all.
Thank goodness. You are correct, Jordy. Definitely something that I think we can all be grateful that she is 100% okay. And you can't say the same about Tua Tagovailoa. Hip injury,
but
I'll say this. He's having a lot of fun after the surgery. Videos come out of him just chilling, playing the ukulele, Jordy. How can you not love Tua Tagovailoa?
He's got a good voice, too. He sounds pretty good. So, look, I mean, it's that culture. They find the good in everything. The good news is the surgery apparently went. Now, they're always going to say the surgery was successful. But they give him a chance to fully recover, to be good. He played his last game as an Alabama Crimson Tide quarterback. Next step, once he gets medically cleared and he goes through that process and all the NFL scouts and owners and all get the go-ahead that he is 100%, Tua will be just fine. I hate to see it happen. I really do. He's a great quarterback. I hate to see anybody lose with their best player. Unfortunately, it happens. It was a fluke play. It just happens, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Exactly. You got to wish him nothing but the best. Just seeming a great guy from everything I can tell. But we'll flip on over Jordy from college football
but
to
can I interrupt?
Go ahead.
Let me interrupt 1 second. I mean, if he had to – I don't want to sound jaded here, but if he had to get hurt, I'm glad it was getting hurt against Mississippi State and not at the same point in time in the game against LSU, because all those Alabama fans would have come out and said, oh, well, if Tua hadn't been hurt, we'd have beaten y'all. So, unfortunately, I hate to say that, but it's true. It's true.
It is what it is, Jordy. Sometimes these things happen, but we'll flip it on over. We're talking about the Alabama-LSU game. What about a former LSU Tiger definitely kind of getting his first career touchdown? Darius Geis had one heck of a performance over the weekend.
Yeah.
You got to love the fact that Darius Geis is finally kind of getting back to 100% healthy, and he finally got things done against the New York Jets yesterday afternoon.
Well, I'm thrilled for him that he's healthy. I loved watching him run when he was at LSU. Unfortunately, he's on one of the worst teams in all of football with no sight of getting better anytime soon. So he's kind of in no man's land. But he's getting paid handsomely. I'm happy for him from that regard. Just stay healthy, and maybe, just maybe, you can get out of that city, get off of that team, and go somewhere else down the road.
And, you know, you brought the Redskins. I mean, towards the end of that ball game yesterday, they were chanting, "Sell the team." And I definitely think a lot of us can agree it's time to kind of get rid of the current owner, Dan Snyder. Just an absolute mess of a person. Hopefully they finally realize and get him out of the power and sell the team. It needs to happen.
Well, he ain't got to do nothing. The only way that they can actually enforce that and make something like that happen, don't buy season tickets. Nobody show up to the games. And if he starts losing money, then he'll say, "Oh, I don't need this. Y'all take somebody else. Pay me $3 billion, and it's yours."
That would be interesting, Jordy, to see if that happens. But, of course, it's very, very unlikely. But we got to kind of talk about the Saints for a minute, Jordy, because that was one heck of a bounce-back performance from the Saints. And it also makes you wonder, is this kind of the tail end of Jameis Winston and his career in the NFL? Because a four-interception ball game, and I saw Fox put forth some effort, Jordy, and he has almost 100 turnovers in his NFL career. Yeah. That is not good at all.
He throws it to the other team. He fumbles it away to the other team. When he was throwing the ball that many times, it's just a matter of time before he throws it to you. Bruce Arians is supposed to be the quarterback whisperer. Everybody says that, man, he loves Jameis Winston. I'm not so sure about that. You turn the ball over that way, that's crazy. And I want to silence everybody for the last time. Those people that were coming out after the Atlanta game and saying the Saints are better with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback instead of Drew Brees, stop it. Shush your mouth. Don't even go down that road. No offense, Teddy Bridgewater, but that's a Hall of Fame quarterback. And there's no way they're better without Drew Brees. So that was their hiccup. Now they get Carolina there. The Saints are 8-2 overall. They have a 3-game lead over the Panthers in their own division. Maybe the Falcons have finally awakened. That's back-to-back big-time wins, both on the road against the Saints and then at Carolina. So I'm kind of glad the Falcons, now that's only their third win. But they're proving to be pretty tough here of late. But Drew Brees is special. And I love – it looked like the old Alvin Kamara. And I don't know what that was against Atlanta. He hardly touched the ball. That's the Alvin Kamara that's a difference maker. And Michael Thomas, gee whiz, you just can't stop the guy. It's week after week, another 100-yard game, ho-hum.
Ho-hum indeed. But, man, it was just great to see everything that was going on with the Saints. Because the game just seemed like it was never really in doubt. Things were starting to click. Yes, you saw Will Lutz kick a couple field goals early. In fact, Jordy, I don't know if you were the same way as I was. Whenever you're watching the NFL on Fox broadcast and you see the graphic pop up of Will Lutz, like 30-something straight made field goals on the road, you were thinking the same thing, Jordy.
Don't jinx him.
Exactly. I'm like, you're going to jinx him. Watch. And then he made it. I'm like, okay, cool. We're going to win this game. I didn't have to worry quite as much. I'm definitely like the Chicago Bears fans who are just officially tearing apart that franchise, and it's all over right now, but the crying for those Bears.
Turn those TVs off. That's right. You don't want to hear any bad news, but y'all stink. It's just, wow. Big win by the Patriots. They're down 10-0, and they come back and beat the Eagles 17-10, and old Tom Terrific is complaining about the offense or lack thereof, so... I don't know. It's something else, but, Vikings pulled one out. Cowboys pulled one out. The cream rises to the top and we'll see, but the Bears get beat 17-7 by the Rams. Neither one of those teams are what they thought they would be. And dadgummit, if San Francisco didn't rally and win again late, to stay just with one loss for the season. So that's all right. They're coming down to the dome. We got something for them.
We got something for them indeed, Jordy. And hopefully, I mean, the bettors in Vegas have something for the San Francisco 49ers because, man, they were not happy because of that late scoop and score or just the straight-up most bizarre play I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Wound up making it a plus-10 ball game, kind of making people very, very much salty who put money on the Cardinals covering. It just was ridiculous to see everything that happened in the final moment. The bad beat, dare I say, of the century.
That's why I don't make any investments. Thank you, CD. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet, and that is Cajun Chef. The B-Art family, for nearly 9 decades, have been putting out the same great product with pride for you. Finest spices, finest peppers, secret ingredients, voila, Cajun Chef hot sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a little bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. LSU shutting down wing Marlon Taylor for an extended period of time as his foot injury lingers. I don't know what's next for the senior, but boy, they could use Marlon Taylor. He is that kind of special. We'll take a break here. When we come back, Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, on the Saints and the NFL next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
No, listen, I thought the tempo was better. I thought we started faster, obviously, getting 20 points in the first half, scoring on a bunch of drives. Would have liked to have gotten something in the two-minute drive at the end and not put our defense back on the field. So that's kind of my takeaway from the first half. Also, a couple of those field goal drives. I mean, listen, we shot ourselves in the foot with some penalties, you know, where, man, we're going to be first and goal inside the five, and all of a sudden, you know, we're backed up and it's, you know, second and 20 or whatever. So a couple of those instances where I felt like we just, you know, self-inflicted wounds, unforced errors, and we got to clean that up. You know, we got to clean that up if we want to be as good as I think we can be. We've got to be better in that area, and then just some little things. You know, just some assignments where, you know, I mean, all the little details. You know, of where to line up and you know, what your job is. You know, everybody just doing their job and eliminating the unforced errors, and we'll score more points.
Drew Brees, after the ball game, a 34-17 Saints win over Tampa by the Bay. And here to talk about it and share his thoughts on the Saints' 8th win of the season against 2 losses is our good friend that joins us each and every Monday, Bob Rose from Canal Street Chronicles. Good afternoon, Robert. How are you?
Good afternoon, my friend. I am well. How about you?
I'm terrific. You think Mike Evans has nightmares before he has to play the Saints? I mean, if there ever was that green rock that is the kryptonite of Superman, the Saints are the antithesis or exactly the same to Mike Evans.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that the truth? I won't lie. I was a little bit concerned about that matchup coming in. Marshawn Lattimore has played so well against Mike Evans, throughout Lattimore's career, and obviously with Lattimore out. I was confident in Eli Apple continuing to play well, and he most certainly did. But, you know, as we've discussed before, Tampa has 2-star receivers in Godwin and Evans, and I thought both Apple and P.J. Williams, along with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, played extremely well all game long. I was definitely pleasantly surprised with how well that entire secondary played, really. I thought they were the key to the game.
Bob, Jameis Winston, what's his future?
Wow. I think that's a huge question. I've always loved Jameis Winston's skill set, off the field problems and issues aside. He just cannot stop turning the ball over. The graphic that they threw up a few times during the game about the amount of turnovers he has had in his 5-year career was just absolutely staggering. I couldn't even wrap my mind around it. And he continues to cripple his team with the type of mistakes that he makes. He definitely shows potential. I mean, he has accuracy, he has good arm strength, excellent mobility, and he's a fierce competitor. He just he can't stop from turning the ball over. I had a big question coming into the season as to whether Tampa Bay would move on from Winston at the end of the year. And you could make a real case for them just, letting him walk in free agency and starting all over at the quarterback position. And if you're head coach Bruce Arians of the Buccaneers, could you really blame him?
No, I mean, look, he needs a balanced attack. He's throwing the ball 51 times. He's going to throw it to you a bunch of them. I mean, that was true. And to the Saints' credit, I think they took that loss to Atlanta personally on the defensive side. I can't recall a better pass-rushing day where they maybe didn't get to the quarterback every time, but they certainly affected the quarterback an awful lot.
Yeah, they sure did. That's the strength of this Saints defense, starting with their pass rush up front. I thought defensive coordinator Dennis Allen had a brilliant game plan. He showed a ton of confidence in that secondary, even with Lattimore out, blitzing Winston, especially early through the first half. And the book on Jameis has always been, if you pressure him, he's going to throw the ball to you, like you pointed out. And the New Orleans secondary did an outstanding job of converting those opportunities into turnovers. But, yeah, you're right. And, when you're watching the game, especially Cam Jordan, my goodness, NFL officials, believe it or not, it is illegal to tackle number 94 for the New Orleans Saints, because how many times, I can't tell you how many times all season long, including yesterday, that I would see Jordan getting strangled coming across or coming around the edge. He set up camp in the Buccaneers' backfield. I thought he had as good a game as we've ever seen Cam play. Run well, as he always does, but put heavy pressure on Winston on seemingly every play. He only had a sack and a half, but he was close to two others, narrowly missed him, and flushed Winston from the pocket to get him off of his mark. Cam played outstanding along with the rest of that Saints defense.
Hi, bros. Canal Street Chronicles. Boy, it sure looked like the old Alvin Kamara, and he is such a weapon when he is healthy. It was great to see him run the ball, catch passes, return kicks. Just the Swiss Army knife kind of a part two with the New Orleans Saints. But, boy, he looked healthy and better than ever.
Yeah, he did. He didn't get into the end zone. The one score he did have was called back by penalty. But other than that, especially in the first half, Alvin had nearly 70 yards of the Saints, 120 total yards in their first two drives. And given how effective he was both as a rusher and a pass receiver, that opened up other opportunities. It kind of freed up room for Michael Thomas to operate through those intermediate routes. And even though the other New Orleans pass targets didn't necessarily make plays yesterday other than Jared Cook, if Alvin continues to stay healthy and continues to be this versatile as we've seen from him in the last 3 years, that's going to make this Saints offense as dangerous as anybody.
Maybe that wasn't such a fluke. I mean, Atlanta goes into Charlotte and just beats down Carolina 29-3. Maybe you think they're rethinking the Cam Newton deal now?
I do think that. I would still be a little bit surprised to see Cam Newton back in the Carolina Panthers uniform next year. But I also don't think that Kyle Allen is the answer, to the Carolina quarterback question going forward. And, give all the credit in the world to Atlanta. They haven't allowed a touchdown in the last 8 quarters of action and against the Saints, as we know, and like you pointed out, against the Carolina Panthers yesterday. And both those games were on the road. I don't need to tell you how tough NFC South road games are.
Yeah.
The Falcons, obviously nowhere near playoff contention, but they really opened some eyes with some performances over the last 2 weeks. But with the Saints facing the Carolina Panthers this week and the Panthers' playoff backs are now against the wall, I think Atlanta really opened the book on how to defense this Carolina offense. And they have little other than Christian McCaffrey. And you get Kyle Allen moving out of the pocket. He is not very good on the run at all. We saw a little bit about of that in the Green Bay loss the Panthers had the week before too. You know, Allen is an intense competitor and he doesn't give up on a play. But you move him out of the pocket and he is next to zero threat to your defense at all, which obviously plays well into Dennis Allen and that Saints defense's hands.
Boy, the National Football Conference is loaded. You've got San Francisco at 9-1. The Saints are 8-2. Green Bay's 8-2. Minnesota's 8-3. Seattle is 8-2. I mean, this jockeying for seeding position, man, every game is critical from here on out.
Yeah, it really is. And the Saints not only have that important matchup against Carolina this Sunday, but in a couple weeks, you know, a big heavyweight showdown with the San Francisco 49ers. You know, the 49ers are going to have a chance to show everybody whether they're, you know, they're truly for real or not, because the second half of their schedule is absolutely brutal. Minnesota's comeback against the Denver Broncos yesterday was impressive as heck. Now, granted, Denver shot themselves in the foot continuously. But you know, Kirk Cousins is really starting to hit his stride and answer so many of his critics. And he's going to have a chance to continue to answer that, because obviously the book on Cousins is that he doesn't play well in big games. And Minnesota's going to have a handful of them down the stretch. You know, Green Bay, I've never seen a Green Bay offense under Aaron Rodgers questioned as much as I have this season. You know, so it'll be interesting what the Packers have to say about the NFC standings down the stretch. But yeah, you could make a case for every single one of those teams and throw in the Saints and obviously the Seattle Seahawks as legitimate Super Bowl contenders. Throw their names in a hat because they're all playing so, so well right now.
He is Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Jordy. Always a pleasure. Take care.
We got a pull for Philadelphia. They host Seattle and Green Bay at San Francisco. The game of the week in the NFL. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
We're going to get everybody's best shot. We're number one in the country, rolling on offense, rolling on defense, so we're going to have to expect everybody's best shot, and we can't expect to come out here and score 35 points and give up none in the first quarter and get out of the game. We've got to expect it to be a dogfight.
That was Joe Burrow shortly after the LSU win in Oxford, 58-37 over the Ole Miss Rebels. Still number one in both the media and coaches' polls. We'll await to see what happens tomorrow night with the playoff committee and what their polls are. But Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, their lead college football writer, kind enough to join us as he does each and every Monday. Ross, It was a bad day in the state of Iowa for Minnesota fans. It was a awful day in Waco, Texas, and also a bad day in Starkville, Mississippi. How are you, my friend?
Good, Jordy. Yeah, it was a separation Saturday kind of day for a lot of teams. You know, Baylor and in Minnesota, obviously. Dropped games for the first time, and probably barring a massive win later on this season in their respective championship games, will be out of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then we saw Alabama lose, as you mentioned, Starkville lose to and the committee looks at that stuff, you know. Yeah. So the committee does not just the eye test, but they factor in injuries. They've said it before and they've done it before.
Right.
And so again, a separation where it's tough to see now Alabama getting in. It was tough before even to see them getting in over maybe a one-loss Power 5 champion. Now it's even tougher.
Star power counts. I've always believed that. They want television ratings, and if their star quarterback is out, I just think that's the death knell to the Alabama Crimson Tide. I just do. We'll see what happens, see how it plays out. Man, I'm telling you what, 58 points is great, but when you give up 37 in Tiger Town, people fire Dave Arant. I mean, people are something. Ross, they are something.
The same people that around a year ago or about maybe 14, 15 months ago wanted Dave Aranda to be the head coach at LSU, I recall. So
yes.
That's college football, though. That's how it works. And, you know, right now Joe Brady is the savior, and Dave Aranda is the guy who's getting a lot of flack, and that's just kind of how it is. You know, for so long LSU was the reverse there. The OC was taking heat. Everybody was praising the DC, you know. Mm-hmm. Look, Ole Miss is got to remember some things about Ole Miss. You know, I think they entered that game number one or number two in rushing in the SEC. Their offensive coordinator is a guy named Rich Rodriguez. He knows football pretty well. All of that said, obviously LSU probably shouldn't be allowing over 600 yards of offense. And again, you know, the committee with the eye test is seeing that, and that's mm-hmm. kind of. The big question right now, I think, if everything goes chalk, if all the favorites win the rest of the way out, is if LSU continues to allow yards and points like they are, and Ohio State continues to pummel people, right, where the Buckeyes jump LSU for the number one seed. I tweeted something out about that earlier today, and catching flack, just posing the question with people saying, it doesn't matter. It does matter. It matters for the number one seed gets the pick of where they would like to play.
Exactly.
Not only that, but they get the four seed, who
exactly.
this year is potentially going to be way worse than the three seed, potentially. There's a gap this year between the top three and the number four, a bigger gap than we've seen in years past, I think. So it does matter, and it's something to keep an eye on.
I believe LSU will remain number one this week. However, I think because of who they play next in Arkansas and who Ohio State plays next in Penn State, if Ohio State looks very impressive, I could easily see Ohio State leapfrogging LSU.
Well, just look at the remaining three games each team has before Selection Sunday. You know, LSU will play one top 25 team, and it'll be a good one. It'll be a top five team. Probably in Georgia in the SEC championship game. Ohio State will play three top 25 teams. They will play mm-hmm. Penn State. They'll play Michigan at Michigan. And then they'll play a Big Ten championship game against a team that's probably in the top 10, if not in the top 15. So, again, you know, when you look at the quality wins, and again, I have my own little system I do. I mean, a quality win to me is a top 30. A win at home over a top 30 ranked team, and a win on the road over a top 50 ranked team. And LSU, I think, has five quality wins. Ohio State, to me, has four right now. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State could catch up with LSU by the end of this thing in quality wins. So that'll be something, you know, we might be looking at. Ohio State's schedule the rest of the way is certainly stronger than LSU's. And I think we all got to remember this. Everybody's acting like Ohio State's schedule up until this point was terrible. It's not like Clemson's. Their schedule is terrible. But right. Ohio State hasn't been terrible. It really hasn't.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, kind enough to join us. If LSU remains unscathed and they play Georgia in the SEC championship game and beat Georgia, is that the only hope that Alabama has? Or is that ship sailed and now we've got – I mean, there's so many different scenarios, but I think that would be the one that would cause a lot of troubles for people. Because I still think if LSU goes undefeated, gets to the SEC championship game, and loses to Georgia, I still think they're in. Am I nuts?
No, I think they're in. It would be a pretty big surprise if, in that situation, Georgia's not the three seed and LSU's not the four seed, especially if it's a close game. Now, if LSU loses by three touchdowns on a neutral field to Georgia, that's another story.
Yes.
Alabama's only hope really is that the Pac-12 champion, whoever it may be, Utah or Oregon, has two losses. And also the Big 12 champion, whether it be Baylor or Oklahoma, has two losses. So they need a lot of teams to start losing. They need those four teams to each drop a game or beat up on one another in the championship game, depending on how you see it there. But they need a lot of losses. I think right now we're in a position where there are really two legitimate teams vying for that four spot if LSU beats Georgia. You know, Georgia beating LSU again probably throws everything out of whack, and you end up having a 1 Ohio State, 2 Clemson, 3 Georgia, 4 LSU. It's probably what might end up happening. But if that doesn't happen and we go all chalk, I think you'll see that the Big 12 champion, if they have one loss still, and the Pac-12 champion, if they have one loss, that'll be the two resumes will stack up against one another. And right now, again, if you
do the better resume,
Oregon versus Oklahoma, and yep. Their resumes, which we wrote about a little bit this past week on SI.com, are fairly similar. Now, Oklahoma's probably going to have the worst loss of them, because remember, Oregon barely lost to Auburn, right. Led that game on a neutral field for yeah. 3.5, well, almost to the very end. So, but we might end up coming down to comparing those two resumes, Oregon and Oklahoma, and they are pretty similar. From the strength of schedule, I think Oregon's probably got them slightly. Quality wins is going to be about the same, I believe. It's going to be tight.
But the eyeball test tells me Oklahoma, down and out, rallies on the road and beats an undefeated Baylor. That sticks out in my mind more so than anything Oregon's done to date.
It sticks out in your mind as a good thing?
Well, I mean, they did come from behind and win the darn thing. Yeah, they did.
I think I could see. No, you're right. And went on the road to an undefeated team. Absolutely. You know, I could see that being. And again, they might get them again. You know, so they have a chance to potentially get Baylor again and beat another. You know, if Baylor keeps rolling, and that's the thing. Oklahoma needs Baylor to keep winning. They need Baylor to beat Texas. They need Baylor to win at Kansas, and so they can pick up potentially another quality win there, another top 15, top 20 win. But it's tight. You know, I think a lot of people right now would say Oregon, and Oregon's going to get a good win against Utah if they win the Pac-12 championship game too. So I think right now, and we have at our SI top 10, we have Georgia at number 4 right now, Oregon at number 5, Oklahoma at 6, and Alabama at 7. And that's kind of where it is now, but obviously, yeah, I mean, all these teams are going to be able to potentially pick big wins down the stretch here.
Okay, I just thought of this because I'm goofy. So we just finished our Thanksgiving meal, and our families are all together. Now we're going outside to play our pickup football game. You got the first pick. You get to choose between these pairs, okay? You either get to choose Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, or you get to pick Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. Who you picking?
Boy, Ja'Marr and Justin have been incredible. They really have, and they're rivaling, you know, Alabama's set of receivers and Judy and Ruggs, you know, throwing Terrace Marshall for LSU and that trio at LSU and the trio at Alabama. I mean, that's six incredible wide receiver talents. I would only choose the NFL players because they're a little more veteran and savvy, but certainly, Ja'Marr and Justin will be playing at the next level.
He is Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Who gets invited to New York for the Heisman besides Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts? Well, who else?
Yeah. Well, I think Justin Fields, if they keep rolling from Ohio State, probably gets invited. Maybe Chase Young, though he's going to miss two games, maybe he gets invited. The kid, Hubbard from Oklahoma State, the running back, has put up ungodly numbers. Maybe he gets invited. It's that group there. I could see I could see all of them. Although, I'm not even sure how the finalists. You have to have enough votes. I think you have to have a certain amount of votes or something, or a certain percentage of votes to advance. You remember Leonard Fournette a few years ago fell short of it. So they don't take a certain number each time. I think it's based on votes, and it might even, if I remember correct, be subjectivity, be based on just, you know, the Heisman Trust and those officials just determining we're going to take this many this time, you know. So I don't know, but any of those guys certainly would be good to bring up there, if not all of them.
All right. LSU, Arkansas, that's a snoozer. What's the big game this week? Is Penn State, Ohio State, right?
That's the one, yep. It's, you know, the winner is likely winning the Big Ten East and going to represent them in the Big Ten championship game against Minnesota or Wisconsin. So
where is that
game? That's the big game. That game is at Ohio State. So I think I saw Ohio State favored by maybe 16, 17 points maybe a little more. I mean, you know, I've seen Penn State play live a couple times, actually, and they got one great player, you know, KJ Hamler, the receiver, and they've got a solid defense, but I don't think they have the firepower to even keep up when Ohio State, I like the Buckeyes to, in the end, run away with it.
I got you. All right, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, always great to have you on, buddy. Take care. And keep that boy over there in Purdue that writes for Forbes. Keep him straight, will you? I mean, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what that boy's doing anymore, but keep him straight.
David Ching?
David Ching. I mean, he's a dad twice over now. I mean, come on. He's up to no good. It's too cold. It's too cold. Anyway, always fun, Ross. Thank you, buddy.
All right, man. See you, Jordy.
Take care. That is Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. Interesting. Who's going to be that fourth team? Who is it? I think the top three are in unless something catastrophic happens, and I just don't see it happening. Who is that fourth team? We'll see. We shall see. Lots of football to be played, but what a weekend it was. LSU by 21 over Ole Miss to improve to 10-0. They've got Arkansas in Tiger Stadium, 6 p.m. Of course, you can listen to the pregame show at 4 and the call of the game at 6 here on 103.7. The game, the Raging Cajuns, 10-point winners over South Alabama to improve to 8-2 overall, 5-1 in the Sun Belt Conference. They've got the blackout game at Cajun Field, 4 p.m. Saturday against Troy. And the Saints improved to 8-2 overall with a 34-17 win over Tampa Bay. They've got the Carolina Panthers for a noon kickoff inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Saints trying to get that home field advantage, which is so important in the playoffs. They got to win every game to do that. My producer extraordinaire put together another vintage LSU piece. We'll hear from that next here on the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, and 1037thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helpert Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, amongst all the football talk, the other big story of the day, Will Wade announced that LSU has got the papers signed, sealed, and delivered on five-star guard Cameron Thomas of Chesapeake, Virginia, according to Will Wade. Quote, "We knew we needed a prolific scorer, and he's that in spades." The fourth five-star prospect to sign with LSU under Will Wade, present freshman Trendon Watford, present sophomore Emmett Williams. The third was forward Naz Reid, who's part of the Iowa G League team on a contract with the Minnesota Timberwolves. So Cameron makes three signees for LSU in the early signing period, joining point guard Jalen Cook of Walker High School in Walker, Louisiana, and forward Bradley Ezawiro, also of Oak Hills Academy. Ezawiro hails from Torrance, California. So big day for LSU basketball. It was a big weekend and a big day for LSU football. We leave you with this montage of LSU's win over Ole Miss. Have a great one, everybody.
Again, two wide to the left. One wide out to the right side. Here comes pressure on delayed blitz. Burrow steps away from it. Now tosses towards the end zone. Chase has it at about the three. Goes on in. Touchdown, Tigers! 34-yard touchdown strike to Jamar Chase. His 11th touchdown reception of the year. Joe Burrow tossing his 34th score of the season. First down, goal to go. Ty Davis Price off the left side. Into the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers! Fourth rushing touchdown of the season for the freshman. And the Tigers extend their lead 13-0 with a minute 22 to go here in the first quarter. First down and 10 for the Tigers. Burrow steps back, now rolls to his right. Little pressure from the backside, launches way down the field. Chase has it at the 10 to the 5. Touchdown, Tigers! Ole Miss concentrating on Joe Burrow. He led them all to the far sideline and then launched down the field. Chase got behind the defense, made the grab, and an easy pitch and catch for a score for LSU. They make it 20-0 with 14:09 remaining here in the first half. It's LSU leading 21-0, knocking on the door once again. Joe Burrow, shotgun snap. Quick screen to Jefferson near side. Got a block he needed. 10, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Touchdown, Tigers! And Justin Jefferson gets in on the scoring act. He'll make it 27-0 LSU with 8:27 to go here in the second quarter.
I'm not finished with you!
First down, goal to go at the 7. Snap back to Joe Burrow. Looking quickly, fires right in the middle of the end zone. Justin Jefferson has it. Touchdown, Tigers! They get 40-23. LSU extends the lead. They get 6, looking to add one more. LSU doing it through the air. Ole Miss doing it on the ground. Snap back to Joe Burrow. Here comes the pressure. They bring the house. Quick slant. Chase has got it. Breaks the tackle at the 45. Across midfield. Down the middle of the field. Breaks it to the near side. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Tigers! 61-yard touchdown pass from Joe Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase. First down, give to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He breaks through at the 40, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. Take it to the house, Clyde. Touchdown, Tigers. 51-yard touchdown run. LSU was in for a battle with the Ole Miss Rebels, but the Tigers going to move on. 10-0 on the season, 6-0 in the SEC in this long-storied rivalry. LSU now making it 4 straight against the Rebels. It's Matt Luke, Coach Ed Ogeron meet at midfield. Players shaking hands. The final seconds roll off the clock. Horn sounds. This one's in the books. LSU gets the win 58-37 over the Ole Miss Rebels.
That's what I have to remind them of. Let's enjoy the win. Let's don't get greedy. Let's keep our feet on the ground. Because to win the game, and we won the game. We won it by 21 points. So. But obviously, when you don't play well on defense at LSU, nobody's feeling good.
And we have great timing. They're special players that are going to play for a long time. I'm lucky to have them on my team. And they're great people and hard workers, too. That means more than anything else on the football field.